And welcome back to the Rock Chalk Podcast. I'm your host, Andy Mitz. Today we are continuing our series, previewing all the opponents that we have on the KU football schedule this year. As we have been doing the last few weeks, we're starting at the very end and going backwards. So up this week is the Oklahoma State Cowboys. And to help me preview Oklahoma State, I have returning to the podcast, Mike Allen, editor over at Cowboys Ride for Free. Micah, how you doing tonight?
I'm doing fantastic. Thank you for having me.
Yeah, no problem. I heard you on the 10-12 podcast the other day, and I forgot, you know, until I went back and listened to some of the other episode that we did, just how much fun it is to talk to some of the other Big 12, people around. So I definitely want to get you back on. I really enjoyed talking to you last time, and I thought we could, you know, really, really talk about this Oklahoma State team that, to be honest, last year was a little bit up and down, and I'm wondering how much you think that's going to continue for this year. So let's real quick, before we get into this year's discussion, let's talk about what happened last year. Last season, I don't think it went anywhere near as well as you guys probably would have wanted it to. Ending the year 7-6 after beating Missouri in the AutoZone Liberty Bowl. But looking at how that went last year, I mean, were you really surprised by the total results, or given the way the rest of the conference kind of went, was that kind of what you were expecting?
I was definitely surprised. I was one of those people that thought that things were going to go a lot better than they did last year. I knew that there was going to be a drop-off, you know, losing James Washington and Mason Rudolph, but I wasn't expecting as big of a drop-off as there was. It just felt really weird. We lost to some teams that we shouldn't have lost to, and we beat some teams that I didn't think we were going to beat. So it was just one of those years where it just, like you said, it was very just roller coastery up and down. And I wouldn't say much better.
In terms of the teams that you lost to, like, I think the only team you lost to that you probably should have lost to, for sure, was Oklahoma. The Iowa State game was probably enough of a toss-up that, you know, I wasn't necessarily too surprised just with the way that they have been playing fairly well. But teams that you should have beaten, that you probably shouldn't have beaten, Texas, I think, was one of those that you probably shouldn't have beaten. I think West Virginia was potentially one of those, but the fact that it was at home, I think, probably kind of helped out a little bit. It was definitely a kind of an up and down season. You definitely beat people you should have and lost to teams that you really shouldn't have, like losing at Kansas State, losing, you know, that fourth game to the first Big 12 game against Texas Tech, like, and then losing at home to end the season against TCU. I'm sorry, losing on the road to end the season at TCU. I think all three of those were kind of surprising. The Baylor game you could probably throw in there as well.
Well, and even OU, who we should have gotten clobbered by, we lost by a 2-point conversion that didn't happen.
Right.
So, like, it just didn't make any sense.
Yeah, last year was kind of a weird year all around for the Big 12, I think. Baylor was a lot better overall, by the end of the season, I think most people thought that they were going to be. Iowa State contending for a spot in the Big 12 title game so late into the season, I think was a surprise to a lot of people. And Texas Tech completely falling off. Well, Texas Tech and TCU both kind of falling off the way that they did, I think, shocked a lot of people. Probably about the only thing that nobody really was too surprised by was, you know, Oklahoma being up at the top of the conference and Kansas being as bad as they were in conference play. So,
yep.
All right. So let's go ahead and turn to this year's team. Coming into this year, kind of what are the expectations for this team?
I think that people aren't going to be very happy if this year looks like last year did. I think they want at least 10 wins. I think obviously that's what the people that are you know, running the team as well. I think Gundy was not very happy at the end of last year. And I think he kind of took a step back and reevaluated things and wants this year to be a lot better, obviously.
So I guess really it's two questions is what is a, you know, what the fans think it should be based off of where people think Oklahoma State should be in the pecking order of the Big 12 and stepping back and trying to objectively look at the talent that's coming back and who's coming in and the rest of the conference. What are reasonable expectations for how good this team could potentially be this year?
I think that people are expecting, and, you know, based on Gundy has gotten Oklahoma State to a point where there's a lot more expectation than there has been. You know, I think the fans saw, you know, what they've done in the past and things like that. They expect 10 wins and to go to a New Year's Six bowl game. And I think that based on the talent that's coming back and some hires that were made in the offseason, like Sean Gleason from Princeton and Charlie Dickey from Kansas State, I think that those expectations are possible. I think that, you know, they can get 10 wins this year and, you know, be in contention for the Big title at the end of the season. Now, is that prediction?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's definitely a possibility. But, I mean, looking at the schedule, trying to be objective as possible, like, I'm having a hard time seeing where you get, you know, 10 wins. I could potentially see 8 or 9 if things break right. But I'm having trouble seeing the 10, you know, because that would require. Go ahead.
I think that 8 or 9 wins is fair, finishing kind of in the middle of the pack in the conference. I think that's kind of the more realistic expectation. Now, like I said, I think that 10 wins are attainable. And I think that can happen, but I think that 8 or 9 wins is a lot more likely. So we'll go with that. Like the more likely.
Yeah. So, I mean,
8 or 9 wins.
Kind of looking through the schedule, you know, I mean, I think it's fairly safe to say that those 3 non-conference games should all be easily or fairly winnable. Playing, you know, opening the season at Oregon State, which I'm not sure. Is that actually in Corvallis or is that a neutral site game?
It's in Corvallis.
Okay. All right. So, I mean, not necessarily the easiest place to play, and the fact you'd be playing at 10:30 at night, you know, Eastern time, so 9:30 at night, you know, Oklahoma time, could be a little bit of rough, you know, sled for them. But it is the first game of the season, so hopefully, you know, that won't be too much of an issue. And then, obviously, home against McNeese, you expect that one to be a win, and playing at Tulsa probably isn't too much to really worry about. So, you know, 3 non-conference wins, I think, is definitely – a reasonable expectation, but then starting the conference season at Texas. Now, I personally don't think Texas is going to be as good as a lot of people seem to think they will be this year, but that's going to be a tough game regardless, you know, being the conference opener for both of these schools, having to go on the road, you know, and having Texas is a fairly experienced team, and so I think that's going to be kind of difficult to expect a win in the, you know, in that situation. I do think it's definitely a possibility. But I do think in order to get to the 10 wins, you're probably either going to have to upset Texas at Texas or you're going to have to upset Oklahoma. Well, I'm assuming it'll be an upset just based off of where people are thinking people are going to be ranked. But, you know, facing Oklahoma at home to end the season, you're going to have at least one of those, I think, in order to get to the 10-win mark just because of how good the middle of the conference is. I mean, are there any of those games kind of sandwiched in the middle of that opening and closing Big 12 game that you're extremely worried about? You know, you have a stretch home against Kansas State, at Texas Tech. I don't know that there's necessarily too much to worry about that. And then at the end, you know, go to TCU. I'm sorry, you host TCU, host Kansas, and then play at West Virginia. I don't know that you should necessarily be too concerned about those 3 games particularly. But really that Baylor, Iowa State, and TCU stretch, I think, is where you could potentially have some hiccups. Any of those games in particular you're the most worried about?
We play Iowa State and Ames, correct?
Correct.
Okay. I'm worried about that game just because Iowa State and Ames gives me the heebie-jeebies always as an Oklahoma State fan. That game
true.
Weird things just happen in that game. So that's definitely one that I could see Oklahoma State going in as a favorite with some momentum. And then
and to be perfectly honest, weird things happen in Ames all the time, even if it's not an Oklahoma State football game. So,
yeah. So that game definitely worries me. Like you were talking about, not really too worried about TCU this year, considering they really don't know who their quarterback is going to be at this point.
Right.
And then West Virginia, that's just a mess right now.
I keep hearing people talk about how West Virginia is happy with a lot of the guys they have returning. And to be honest, I'm not seeing it. Like, you know, they lost their quarterback. They lost a lot of guys that are going to be fairly important for them, or that were fairly important for them last year. You know, they're installing a brand new coach. Like, they're doing a whole bunch of stuff that's different. And so while, yeah, it could turn out to be pretty good, I don't know how anyone can expect that to be a good situation in the first year for all of that, with how much they're missing. So, I mean, you know, I wouldn't necessarily be shocked if West Virginia finished, you know, third or fourth in the Big 12, just because there always is kind of that possibility when you're talking about Big 12 football. But I think anyone who's expecting them to finish in the top half of the conference is either a complete homer or just really doesn't believe in any of the other teams that are going to be in the middle of the pack.
Yeah, that's kind of, I mean, honestly, Oklahoma State's really similar. I feel like there's a big possibility that we could finish in the top half of the Big 12, and there's also a very big possibility that we finish, like, 7th or 8th in the Big 12. Like, it could really go either way. So.
Yeah, definitely. I think the one thing that Oklahoma State has going for them is just that continuity, obviously, with the coaching. You know, Gundy being the most tenured, being in his position the longest in the Big 12 by far, I definitely think helps. And so,
yeah,
you know, I'm not.
He's going into his 15th season, which is insane.
Yeah, that is kind of crazy. Actually, it's kind of funny. I was on the 10-12 podcast the other day. And we somehow got talking about Gundy and, you know, talking about we were actually talking about Les Miles, you know, and how he was at Oklahoma State and then Gundy followed him. And so who could be the Kansas's Gundy after Les Miles leaves Kansas? It was a really weird transition that we got to there. But, you know, it is pretty impressive that Gundy has been there for that long, you know, and honestly, just the way that Oklahoma and Oklahoma State and Texas football is, you know, down in the southern portion of the Big 12, you would think. I mean, he's done well enough, I think, to kind of keep people off of his back in terms of, you know, clamoring for something a little bit better.
If you looked at our mentions on Twitter.
well, I was going to say, he's been mediocre enough in the last few seasons that people are starting to get a little bit restless. I don't know if he could survive another couple seasons of, you know, barely making a bowl game type of performance before someone's going to have to do something. You know, so whether it's him cleaning house and for all the rest of the staff, or if they decide to let him go, I mean, I wouldn't be surprised by either. You know, I think there's a big problem with a lot of, you know, decent or good to fairly or somewhat great teams thinking that they should be better than they necessarily should be every single year. You know, Oklahoma State is the kind of program that I think should be expecting anywhere between 7 and 9 wins every single year with an occasional 10 or 11 win season. You know, that sounds like that should be kind of where they expect to be all the time. I think most fans I've met that are Oklahoma State fans are at least somewhat reasonable, you know, may wish for something a little better, but don't get too upset if, you know, you guys aren't getting 11 or 10 win seasons every single year. But you have that in every single fan base. You know, you have that unreasonable group of people. My impression of the Oklahoma State fan base is that group isn't necessarily as big as some other places.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like people are starting to realize that this may never be a program that competes for, you know, spots in the college football playoffs and things like that every year. But like you said, their expectations are getting a little bit higher. They want a 10-win season every once in a while, maybe even a couple in a row. So I think that's kind of the expectation is at least 7 wins in a decent bowl game, I guess. So.
Yeah. Yeah. So, I mean, if I was handicapping it right now, I probably would put Oklahoma State in that, 4-5 range in terms of where they're going to finish in the Big 12 this year. Baylor, Iowa State, and Oklahoma State, I think, will be vying for the rest of the top half, despite the fact that I don't necessarily think Texas is going to be as good as a lot of people think they will be. I do think that they'll probably finish up towards the top of the conference. I do think the top five will be in some order, Oklahoma, Texas, Baylor, Iowa State, and Oklahoma State this year. And I think that's a fairly reasonable ranking if you have them in any particular order other than, like, if, someone has Oklahoma fifth, I'm going to call them a little bit crazy. But other than Oklahoma being, one or two for sure, the rest of those four teams, I think, would be reasonable to slot them in pretty much any position there.
Yeah, I agree.
All right. So we kind of looked through the schedule a little bit. Actually, real quick, before we move on, I did want to kind of actually talk about the details of this team in terms of who we can expect to hear from this year. But before we do that, I am going to go ahead and throw it to a quick break. We'll be right back on the Rock Chalk Podcast. And we're back. Okay, so I mentioned it before the break. Let's kind of talk about the composition of this particular team. So first things first, what are the big pieces that this team lost from last year that they're going to have to find ways to fill those holes coming into this year?
So Oklahoma State lost a huge part of their offense when they lost running back Justice Hill. He's going to the NFL, going to play with the Baltimore Ravens. So he was, he was going out for Big 12 awards every year, All-American, things like that. So he was definitely a huge part of this team, not only from a production standpoint, he put up insane numbers, but from a team leadership, just a solid dude to have in the locker room situation as well. So he's a big loss for this Oklahoma State team. And then on defense, you have Jordan Burleford. He's going to go play with the Washington Redskins. So, and he was a big part of that defense his last season. He kind of stepped up and became the guy on defense. So those are two really big losses. Tyrone Johnson decided to go to the NFL. That was kind of a shock. He was somebody that I really was banking was going to return to finish out his last year of eligibility, but decided to go play and got signed as a undrafted free agent with the Texans. So that's another, I wouldn't say huge, but that's another piece of our offense that's going to be gone next year.
Well, I can tell you for sure, even the guys that aren't going to be like superstars, if you lose enough of those, decent pieces, it's really easy to get your team sent out. We've had to deal with that at Kansas quite a bit, only having a couple guys that are actually really worth anything in terms of building a scheme around. And so, while he may not have ever, slated in to be kind of a superstar down at Oklahoma State, he probably would have been extremely useful and really helpful for the way the scheme was set up.
Yeah,
I definitely understand that.
That was kind of my thoughts on that, is he would have been super great to have. And then J.D. King transferred, went to Georgia Southern, I believe. And he was going to be another really good back for us to have next year. But I think that he kind of got lost in the shuffle a little bit and kind of sat with maybe with Coach Gundy and kind of thought within himself that, was being honest with himself that he wasn't necessarily going to get as much playing time as he wanted. So he moved on. So that's kind of all the big pieces that are going to be gone next year.
Be missed. Right.
Yeah.
So I guess that kind of, now let's kind of talk about the guys that are actually going to be there. Who are the biggest contributors that you're expecting to see on the offensive side of the ball?
So at quarterback, I think that Spencer Sanders is going to be our guy. You don't bring in a four-star quarterback who is the Gatorade Player of the Year in Texas and not start him, I think, his sophomore year. So I think he's gonna play. I think he's gonna be really good. I've watched some of his videos in practice, and he's, you know, throwing the ball really well. And I think that he's gonna come out and be really good. And then you've got Chuba Hubbard. Chuba was starting to break through last season some injury situations with Justice Hill. He really stepped up to the plate and was just a really solid running back for us. And I think that he could get some valuable yardage for Oklahoma State this year. And then Tylan Wallace is back, Biletnikoff Award finalist. And I mean, it's always a big deal when the Biletnikoff Award finalist is back. I think definitely. He's going to be big next year again. So, yeah, those are kind of the three big guys on offense that are going to be either they were here and weren't playing and they're going to start next year, or they were here and they started and they're just going to continue.
Yeah, definitely. All right. So what about on the defense? I think a lot of people, you know, the Big 12 is known for its offense, but I think what we've come to realize is that the better teams typically have to have a fairly good defense in order to be successful consistently inside the Big 12. So who are you guys expecting to be your biggest contributors on defense coming up this year?
So Calvin Bundage, he's been big for us his whole career at Oklahoma State. He's just the kind of guy that wants to get to the ball and can get you some big time tackles when you need him to on, you know, third down situations and things like that. So he's a really big returner. I think he's not a player, but I think it's a big deal to talk about is, this is Jim Knoll's second year. So I feel like last year was kind of a welcome to the Big 12 for Jim Knoll. You know, we have really good offenses here in the Big 12. And so I think that was kind of his introduction to that. And so this year, I think he's going to be a little bit more prepared for that, and be able to have a little bit better schemes and things like that. And then, you know, continuing on the player side, you know, you've got Kenneth Essa Magruder, who's going to be back next year. You've got Drake Bernard. He made a couple of really big plays last year. Colby Peel is coming back next year. So we've got some safeties that I think are going to be just continue to grow and continue to be really good for us next year. So, like I said, I just think it's going to come down to, you know, Jim Knoll getting a chance to work with these players and, you know, now, you know, kind of knowing what to expect. So.
Yeah. I mean, just ask Oklahoma and Texas, you know, the defensive coordinator can be probably one of the most important contributors on the defensive side of the ball. They've both had problems with that in the last few years. And so it's definitely, just as important to have a good defensive coordinator as it is to have good defensive players as well. Kansas has dealt with a lot of the same stuff too. You know, we had Clint Bowen, and he ended up getting demoted, I think, to linebackers coach or something like that. And so, you know, if you don't have a good defensive coordinator that can scheme for these really prolific Big 12 offenses, then you really don't stand a chance. All right. So finally, in terms of makeup of the team, what recruit, whether it's a high school player coming in, or if it's like a junior college transfer or even just like a graduate transfer, which new guy do you think is going to have the biggest impact this season for you guys?
That's a really hard question. If we're being kind of realistic, I'm not completely sure that any of our recruits are going to play this year.
I wish I could say that for Kansas.
They'll play, but I don't necessarily think that they're going to get enough minutes to really say, you know, mm-hmm. that player made it. You know what I mean?
That's perfectly fair.
I really like Grayson Boomer. He's a tight end, or at Oklahoma State, we call them cowboy backs, which are a tight end hybrid player.
Now, what is that term you said?
Cowboy back.
I don't think I've ever heard of that before.
So it's a cowboy backs are specific to Oklahoma State, and it is a tight end hybrid. They're really important for Oklahoma State, and you know I think that Grayson Boomer is going to be able to get some playing time at Cowboy back, but I don't necessarily know if he's going to get huge minutes because you've got returners like Jelani Wood, who have been, you know, really big in that position.
Interesting. So I'm still just a little confused. What exactly, like, when you say it's kind of a tight end hybrid, is it kind of like a cross between a tight end and a fullback?
Yeah, so it's a fullback, tight end, wide receiver hybrid.
Okay. That makes a whole lot more sense now. I think we've seen those types of roles before. Especially like I know the Kansas City Chiefs are really big on using a fullback, but also kind of having their tight ends do similar sorts of things to what a fullback would do in a traditional lineup. And so I think a lot of people are familiar with the concept of like what that type of hybrid player would do. I actually had never heard of that position.
Yeah,
and obviously cowboy back, you know, would be unique to a team whose mascot is the Cowboys. But
I just couldn't think of the position it was crossed with. I couldn't think of fullback for some reason. My head just would not come up with it. But yeah, so it's
the fullback is kind of dying in football anyway, because you don't have a lot of power running games that need a fullback nearly as much. So there's not very many college programs that actually have a fullback anymore. And even at the NFL level, like I think, to be honest, Kansas City is probably the only team that has consistently used a fullback for the last, you know, 8 or 9 years. And so it's kind of a dying position. They tend to kind of cross its responsibilities over into a bunch of different areas, but it's definitely a unique kind of skill set to have.
Yeah, for sure. So, like I said, Grayson Boomer is going to be coming in that position. And like I said, we've got some returners that I think are going to do most of the work there, but I definitely think that Boomer is going to see some time depending on, you know, obviously what the coaches see at camp, but yeah, so I think that he's also going to be, he's my recruit that I'm most excited to see from this past class.
Yeah, definitely. All right. So I do have one more question I want to ask you, and then we're going to kind of get into a little bit of off topic, but we ran a little bit longer than I thought we were going to. So I'm going to go ahead and throw it to one more quick break. We'll be right back on the Rock Chalk podcast. And we're back. Okay. So final question for our Oklahoma State preview, of all the games on the schedule, which one do you think would be most likely to be the defining game for your season?
Defining game? That's a hard one.
Yeah. So I know that, like, over on the 10-12 podcast, which is what I had, you know, I went on to talk about what the most important game is for Kansas. And you can kind of think of it either that way, or maybe at the end of the year when you look back, which one is going to kind of be the game that decided – like how people are going to view the season. So it may not be the most important for, you know, setting up success in the season. So like, I think a lot of people have looked kind of naturally to rivalry games, which in some cases might make sense. But you know, in other cases, it might be a particular game that, you know, set the trajectory. So like, for example, one that I've thought about for Oklahoma State would be that game at Texas. Despite the fact that, you know, I don't know that you guys will necessarily be favored in that game. You know, if you don't get that early win, it puts you behind in the Big 12 race and kind of clearly, I think, would clearly show at that point that you guys probably are not going to make a push for the title game. But if you win that game, then you have a really good shot, I think, of setting yourself up to finish second or third in the Big 12 and maybe make a push to the title game for this year. So, I mean, that's probably one that I would probably – yeah.
I was actually going to pick that game. I think that's going to kind of be the – all right, so – it's going to set up as
the bellwether of your season.
Yes. I think it's going to be, you know, if we win this game, it's going to give us a lot of momentum, especially if we're not supposed to win. I think if we end up going into that game as a underdog, which think we will.
Very likely.
If we can go to that game as an underdog and end up winning, you know, in DKR, I think that's going to be huge. So I think that's going to be the game that kind of defines our Big 12 season. Because, like you said, it's also really important to think about the fact that if you lose that game, you're already behind. So I think that game.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's still possible if you lost that game, but then were somehow able to pull out a victory against Oklahoma in the finale. Like, people might think of that Oklahoma finale game, you know, it's kind of more of one that defined what people are going to think about for this season.
That's what I was going to say. Depending on how the rest of the season goes, it could be Bedlam, because Bedlam could theoretically decide who's going to go to the Big 12 championship. Like, in a perfect world, in a perfect world, you know, we're playing Bedlam to decide who goes to Jerry's World. So.
Well, I think in a perfect world, you probably would rather it not matter at that point for you guys. So, far enough ahead. Or, you know, both you and Oklahoma are going to make it, and it'll be a rematch for the next week. I don't think that's necessarily very likely. If you guys are up there and kind of pretty secure, I don't think it's probably going to be because Oklahoma's dropped off quite a bit. But also, I just think that the Big 12 is going to be so competitive, you know, that it may potentially be that you guys are fighting for a spot in the Big 12 title game with that. That is also going to require, though, I think, wins both at, you know, or against Baylor and at Iowa State. If it's not going to be that Texas or that Oklahoma game, then it's probably going to have to be that at Iowa State. I have a hard time picking these kinds of things, because ultimately you're going to look back at the end of the season and there's probably going to be a game that you think is kind of the turning point.
With it being around Robin, every game is so important, you know.
Oh, yeah. You know, people like to make fun of the Big 12 for the whole, you know, one true champion thing, but it still remains the fact that they are the only conference where everybody plays everybody. And so it's very difficult to really – you can't sneak by anybody. You have to play everybody. You have to either get very fortunate that a big loss doesn't hurt you because other people took big losses, or you just have to outplay everybody to kind of set yourself up for sure. So.
Yeah. So, I mean, honestly, I think that it kind of depends which games are important is going to depend on how other games go. So.
Yeah.
But at this moment right here, right now, that Texas game is going to be really important because it's going to set up.
I definitely agree.
The rest of everything else.
All right. So that's it, I think, for our Oklahoma State preview. I know we were talking a little bit on Twitter before we got started here, and just a little bit of kind of insider information on how the podcast works. We are recording this well in advance of when it's actually going to drop, partly because of my own personal vacation plans. I want to make sure that we don't, you know, miss out on any of these in the order. But some big other news in the sport world, the U.S. Women's National, or I'm sorry, the Women's World Cup is going on, and the U.S. Women's national team just had a very convincing victory actually earlier today that I know you wanted to talk about at least a little bit. So first of all, like, what is, do you think is important for sport fans to take out of the Women's World Cup?
So I think that it's important to talk about the Women's World Cup just because women's sports don't get enough love, and they're awesome. I love women's soccer. I didn't play soccer growing up, but I grew up watching, you know, Abby Wambach and, those World Cup teams that she was on and things like that. And it's awesome. And this team is super good, and they deserve people to watch them. I know that a 13-0 loss sounds super boring, but it was insane. Like, I've never been so entertained by a 13-0 sporting event in my entire life.
Yeah, so I tuned in just a little bit before half, and it was 3-0. And my thought was, well, U.S. is going to win this comfortably. Is it really going to be worth watching the second half? And then just to see them put on the clinic that they did, you know, there was a five or less than 5 minute period where they scored 4 goals. I think it was just like back to back to back. There was a single minute where they scored 2 goals in a single minute of game time, which is pretty unheard of. And there was a lot of, I think, really misguided takes on Twitter about how, you know, U.S. was running up the score and they shouldn't have been celebrating goals the way that they were and everything. And I think what people fail to realize is that, you know, despite the fact that this is a really good team, they actually have quite a few players on this roster who have never played for the women's national team before. And so, you know, when they got a goal to go up 9-0 or 11-0 or 13-0, those were players that had never scored for the U.S. women's national team previously. And so,
yeah,
of course,
like
you're going to celebrate the
goal.
First
yeah.
goal they ever have in international play.
Yeah. And shout out to Alex Morgan. She's awesome.
Oh
she
my
had
gosh.
Five today.
Yes, five goals, which is I believe that is a World Cup record in terms of
it's
goals
a
by a single.
I don't think it's.
I don't remember. There were so many different records. Like, I know, obviously, 13 goals in a game is actually a World Cup record. 10
yeah.
goals and a half is an international play record. Like, just random or completely ridiculous records they put up today. And, yeah, Thailand was definitely overmatched. But they definitely, you know, it's not like the women's national team should have thrown in the towel or, you know, really dialed back. They have a lot of players that need the game experience, need to kind of try things out, because this is a team that really hasn't played together a lot. And so, you know, they're going to need that experience when they get to play some of the better teams.
Yeah, exactly. And I think that it's getting in the World Cup, how many goals you score in matches in this round is important when you get to the group stages. That's like
right.
It's a big deal.
It's not even just the fact that it's a tiebreaker for coming out of the group and like for the seeding in the group. But if I remember correctly, when they get to the brackets, you know, they'll take the first and second team from each group. But because there's only six groups, they also take a few of the third place teams. And so things like goal differential or goal scored is important for determining your relative placement inside of the brackets. And so it's very, very important to try to, you know, pad those stats as much as possible to make sure that you're getting one of those third place teams instead of one of the second place teams.
Not only that, but it's such swag. Like, Abby Wambach was on Twitter just like praising this team. And she was like, I have never seen such just utter, I don't give a crap what other people think. We're playing this game and we're going to play it the way we want to. And I love it. So.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, you know, and again, the fact that it was the first game for them in World Cup action, you know, trying to get a bunch of new players integrated, like, it didn't make sense for them to dial anything back. They definitely needed to see what they can do with all these players and get people rolling, because they're going to need it in the games coming up in the rest of their group. And they're going to need it in, you know, once they get to the bracket play. So they're going to need people firing on all cylinders. And this is the perfect opportunity to do that in terms of a tune up. So,
well, and
any other teams you think? Oh, go ahead.
Another insane thing is that their subs are Carly Lloyd and Kristen Press. Like, those are subs on this team.
Yeah, it's just ridiculous. I mean, you know, it's funny because a lot of people were talking about how maybe the U.S. women's team is coming back to the pack a little bit in terms of some of the other top teams. And actually, I think going into the World Cup, France is actually favored to win, partly, I think, because they're hosting, but also because a lot of people have thought that France is kind of closing the gap. But I don't think you can necessarily make that, you know, France made a statement with their opening game. I believe they won 4-0, or maybe 4-1. But then the U.S. came right back and made a statement of their own by scoring 13 goals, you know, in their first match. So,
yeah, I think that, you know, Germany is always up there too.
Yeah, definitely.
So I think it's going to be kind of a race between those three. So.
Yeah. Well, Micah, thanks for joining me tonight. You actually kind of fulfilled the itch that we typically have. One of our basketball editor, whenever we have him on, does a random sports minute. And so World Cup soccer was kind of that random sports minute for the day for us. It's been
a while
since we've had one of those, just kind of with the way that it's been going. But it was great to have you on. Were there any other final thoughts you wanted to leave us with tonight?
No, I think we're good. You can follow me on Twitter at MicahAllen18 and follow the site at CowboysRSS.
Sounds good. And I mean, I'm assuming you guys are going to be doing quite a bit of kind of lead up to the football season. So if people wanted to get more information about this Oklahoma State team, you guys should be having stuff coming out throughout the summer, right? To kind of get ready for the season.
Yep, we're working on kind of getting together our preseason schedule right now, actually. So we should have some preseason stuff up on the site here pretty soon. So.
Yeah, I know exactly how that works. So, all right, Micah, thanks again for joining me. And for those of you guys that are listening, thanks again for taking time to listen to this podcast. We really do enjoy bringing all of these to you. If you have not already, please do find us out on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, all of that. Just search for Rock Chalk Talk, and you can subscribe there. Please do subscribe, rate, 5 stars, nice comments, all that stuff. It really does help to get the podcast out there so that more people can listen and we can bring you guys more great content. So, but we will go ahead and leave it there. Micah, once again, thank you for joining me. Thank you guys again for listening, and we will catch you next time on the Rock Chalk Podcast.